Legendary Winchester AA shot shells are used throughout the world by millions of shooters. One specific AA target load that has everyone talking is the AA Diamond Grade. The Diamond Grade Elite target load has 8% antimony shot. It's the hardest shot available for crushing clays, and it's copper plated. Winchester AA, it's the choice of champions.
You are now tuned into Shotgun Sports USA, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S.
and streaming all over the world.
We talk to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you are into clay target sports, you are at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
Welcome to the last episode of 2021 on Shotgun Sports USA. We have a big 2022 planned, and we're excited about the future, not just in our podcast, but in the sport in general. This is an episode that was recorded about a month ago, and I have Dr. Colo and Will Fennell back on. We had such good response off the prior episodes that I decided to do another one. There's a lot of eye dominance questions answered, how to slow the bird down with your eyes, the game of police, and a lot more. Right now on Shotgun Sports USA. Dr. Colo and Will Fennell on the phone, and you know, we've had some conversations in the past with all three of us, and you know, I wanted to kind of touch back with Dr. Colo about his experience shooting outside of the Northeast. He finally got to travel around and see Florida and Texas and all of these other places. And I kind of wanted to see how that impacted your outlook on shooting in different regions of the country. So I kind of want to talk about that a little bit. You all right with that?
I'm good with that. Okay. As long as we don't have to talk about my score at the Nationals.
Well, I don't want to talk about mine either, so that makes two of us. Will may want to talk about his because he did okay. So,
yes, he did.
So if he gets off on a rant about talking about scores at Nationals, I'm just going to mute him, okay?
Just edit my crap out, right?
Yeah. So how y'all doing?
Doing good, buddy. So, you know, it's been a very unique year for me. What happened, I don't know if everyone knows, but I sold my practice 2 years ago. And Goldman Sachs came calling, and it truly was an offer I couldn't refuse. I was very fortunate in that they allowed me to carve out my shooting aspect. So all my shooting exams and all my related classes involvement, I was able to keep myself. So I'm working a day and a half a week now with 2.5 months off a year. And so this is the first year that I really got a chance to kind of spend some time on my shooting. You know, quoting Anthony says that what I do is kind of the frosting on the cupcake, the last 5%. Well, getting into more varied venues, more demanding venues, I certainly came to the realization that I do deal with the last 5%. And I deal very well with the last 5%. What I haven't dealt with is the first 95%. Okay. So we're working on that right now. But it is a situation where I was very fortunate. I spent the entire month of February down at South Florida Shooting Club. They were incredible hosts. They couldn't do enough for me. I ended up seeing 19 of their shooters down there. and just had a wonderful, wonderful experience getting a chance.
And you shot some great tournaments.
Yes, I did. Okay, yeah. I guess the Gator was a great tournament, but that okay, I can compare very well to the Nationals, but we can discuss that later. No, good targets, good friends. You know, in my travels this year, I've come to realize that the most significant factor related to my fortune is the fact that the shooting environment just has so many great people. And I think the people are the biggest part of it. I'm just extremely fortunate to be able to experience that. Went out for a couple weeks and spent some time out in Sonoma, California, at Wing and Barrel. Quite a facility. Hard to believe that they could put together a shooting facility like that in California, but they've done it. They've done a beautiful job. Different situation out there, very different than South Florida. More, okay, beginning shooters and more, okay, shooters that don't have the time or the drive to necessarily want to leave their spouse, quit their job, and win the U.S. Open in 2 years. So it was fun working in that environment. And then had a special, special time down with Laurie and Dan Daniels down in Westside, down in Houston. Again, just gracious, gracious people, and had really good experience, again, working with very, very dedicated shooters. So that all has enhanced things quite a bit for me in terms of my travels, and certainly has allowed me, because of the level of shooter that I've been dealing with, I think advance some ideas in relation to visual control and what's best from an eye doctor's pair of shoes. The thing we have to realize what's coming from me is I feel very, very solid in my eye doctor shoes. I try to keep everything in that mode. And sometimes I've got to stretch out a bit, kind of a little beyond my pay grade. And I try to watch that carefully. So again, like I say, with my instruction, with my podcast, you've got to remember, I can't change my shoes. So this is coming directly from the eye doctor shoes, and it may be
what you mean is you're staying in your lane as an eye doctor and you try not to stray off as a shooting instructor.
Well, I don't know enough. Okay. If I knew more, I could start straying better. Okay. But I just don't know
more. You know more than you realize, but I hear what you're saying, buddy.
Okay. But it's a situation. I guess what I'm saying more than anything else, Will, is that when I say something, you've got to remember the shoes that I'm wearing. It may be very contrary to your modality that you're using or your instruction, but I can't change my shoes.
Right.
I guess I'm saying that more than anything.
Yeah, he's gonna speak as a doctor and not a shooter, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's amazing to watch him work, Justin. I mean, there at Westside, next thing you know, he's pulling out Doppler radar and he's measuring shooters' reaction times. And he's pretty more of a total package than he realizes. And work alongside Dr. Colo has been very, very instructive to me.
In a perfect example, okay, we had occasion to be able to work with last year's World Women's Police Champion. Who's a bit off dominant and kind of falling off the cliff in the sporting venue, because that gave her the environment to get the conscious involved. And as long as she was in the Halise ring, in other words, Justin, if somebody's shooting Halise, if somebody's shooting Bunker, if somebody's shooting Olympic ski, last Tuesday, I had the 16-year-old girl that won the gold medal this year for international skeet on the 19 and under. And she got the silver medal in the 21 year and under. You know, it was really cool because she was so good that I would have her repeating shots very selfishly, having nothing to do with her development and everything to do. I just wanted to watch her shoot it again. Okay. what a wonderful lady. What a wonderful lady.
So this would be a perfect time. Justin, tell Dr. Colo about Jeremy shooting Halise. And yep. Let Dr. Colo explain why.
Yeah, you brought up Halise a second ago, and I have actually a couple of questions written down about Halise, because this weekend was really my first experience watching Halise. I've never shot it, but a friend of mine, Jeremy, we were shooting at Cherokee Rose, and he wanted to try Halise, so I went out there and watched. And he hadn't been shooting long, but he goes out to the Halise ring and shoots 25 out of 30, which I think is a pretty good score for someone that's never shot Halise.
And someone that's what is he, class shooter? C-class?
Yeah, he's in C-class, and he's really more left-eye dominant than he is right-eye dominant.
Doc, from testing, he's somewhere around the middle, around R3, L3. But then he goes, lights it up first time on the Halise ring. Explain to Justin why.
Yeah, I'm interested.
So if somebody comes to me, they say, I'm going to shoot bunker. That's all I want to shoot. I'm going to shoot Halise. That's all I'm going to shoot. I'm going to shoot flyers. That's all I'm going to shoot. I could care less what their dominance is, because dominance only comes into play when the conscious gets involved. If the conscious is kept out of the equation, then the brain knows what to do. Now, I'll be getting a little redundant here maybe with some of the stuff that we've talked about, but it's important to bring this up. So most people think that the reason we're looking hard at the target is to get better input. But as an eye doctor, that happens in a nanosecond. Okay, the reason that we're looking hard at a target is to give the conscious that can only do one thing at a time a difficult enough task to keep it out of the way. So let's say that your friend, okay, is central dominant. Let's say he's R3, L3, right at his nose, shooting right-handed. Now, if we draw a line, see, here's where I wish I had my whiteboard. But if we draw a line along the gun, okay, to the right eye, if he's R1, L1, right at the right eye, then now he's looking right along the axis of the gun, and where he's pointing is where he's shooting. However, if his dominant position is to the left of that at his nose, if we draw a line now from his nose to the end of the gun and continue that line out to the target line, it's to the right of where the target really is. So the brain is looking along the dominant position and thinks he's shooting to the right of the target. So what does he do? He moves the gun to the left. So now, on a 40-yard crosser coming left to right, he has to lead it plus how much he moved the gun to the left. On the 40-yard crosser right to left, he has to lead it minus how much the gun's already to the left. So the 40-yard crosser left to right needs 8 feet. The 40-yard crosser right to left needs 3 feet. But that's only if you're conscious of that bird-barrel relationship.
Right.
If you're seeing the lead, Justin, but not looking at it. seeing the lead being subconscious and looking at it being conscious, then the brain knows what to do.
And Justin, that's why Jeremy's getting better with both eyes open, looking at the target and shooting versus patches and closing the eyes and all that stuff.
Well, it, you know, it's interesting. With the patch, let's talk about, you know, I was going to kind of do a segment on off dominance, and we may still roll into that, but let's address that right now. So if you're off dominant, and if the conscious gets involved, then the scenario that I just described occurs. Did I, without my whiteboard, did I get that across okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I drew it myself.
Okay. So now, if we want to occlude that off eye, now we're right along the axis of the gun. We're R1 and there's no L. So now we're looking along the axis of the gun. However, when we occlude the eye, we have two distinct goalposts. The end of the barrel is as clear as the target. When we don't occlude the eye, the barrel's kind of there. I like the way Dan Carlisle said that it's in another place. But when we put that patch on, or when we close the eye, now we have two distinct goalposts. So if we hold on at all, the brain's going to want to go to the gap. The brain's going to want to go to the lead. So what people don't realize is, for two completely different reasons, when you're off dominant, or when you're occluded, when the conscious gets involved, you fall off the cliff. Now, if I have someone that's solid, R1, L1, okay, and they're...
Meaning they're strongly right dominant.
Yeah. And they're... A good score for them is an 85. When they have a bad score, it's an 80 or a 78. But when I have someone that's R3, L3, or
meaning central dominant,
or off dominant, or using a patch for a completely different reason, if 85 is good for them, then when they're off, when they're fatigued, when they're doubtful that the eye is coming off of the target and increasing the conscious relationship, burning the barrel, their bad round isn't an 80, it's a 62. They fall off the cliff. Because, Justin, for the off-dominant person, left to right and right to left need different leads, and for the patched person or person with the eye closed, they have two of the distinct goalposts and they look at the lead and they slow down.
Yeah.
Now this brings up, you know, my ADD kicks in. There's something really important that I want to bring up here that is more important for you instructors than for me. And that's understanding when someone's occluded, there's two ways for them to operate. There's the right way and there's the wrong way.
Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by pro-matic traps?" Think about that statement for a minute. He's right, and you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five stamp, and sporting clays, designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the Claybot by Rainier Products. Visit www.backwoodsquailclub.com or give him a call at 843-546-1466.
Now, the wrong way, and there are a number of instructors that will patch a person to get a better score. That's going to happen, Justin, because if you use a patch to enable the shooter to take the barrel to the bird and look for the relationship, they will get better. If they're shooting 18 out of 25, they'll leave shooting 20 or 21 out of 5. Mm-hmm. But they'll never shoot more than the 21. The point that I'm trying to get here, guys, is when someone's occluded, there's two ways to do it. One way is the exact same solution is someone that's off dominant shooting both eyes open. So the occluded person doing it the right way and the off dominant person doing it the right way, the solution is exactly the same. So if they're doing the right way, you could have somebody that's off dominant.
So, tell them the right way, Doc.
Okay. So if you have someone that's off dominant and they don't know where the gun is and They can't operate in terms of total concentration on the target, they keep falling off, then you could patch them. And if you have them do it the right way, then eventually take the patch off. But you can't patch them and have them doing it the wrong way better. Okay, so here's the right way. In either situation, for a different reason, when you first see the bird, it's just got to be a bird. No detail. As you start ratcheting the attention onto the bird, when that point of detail that you determined in your conscious plan, okay, is clear and crisp, gun goes off. Now, if the patched person does that, or the off-dominant person does that, what they've created is an environment that is giving the conscious a difficult enough task to keep it out of the way. But the moment of greatest visual attention on the target, the gun's got to go off. So if you're going from a softball to a baseball to a golf ball to a pea, at that moment of greatest attention, gun's got to go off. Everything inside of that, Justin, is active, i.e. subconscious. The nanosecond you go over that line, now, okay, you're getting passive. And as soon as you get passive, now you're increasing the conscious. You're increasing
passive, meaning you're studying the relationship,
right,
of the bird and the barrel.
You've gone past the point where you've given the conscious a difficult enough task. Now, okay, you're taking your eye off the bird, and you're increasing the consciousness of the bird and the barrel.
And that's where your average club shooter and maybe instructor says, "Oh, you're riding the bird."
Yes.
You're running, you're matching at speed. Now you're starting to analyze the relationship. That's the classic riding the bird. And at that point, you're falling off the cliff.
Yeah.
So person that's off dominant or occluded for two different reasons, okay, has to never be careful. They always
tell them the two different reasons.
Okay, the reason with the patch or the occlusion is the bird and the barrel are equally clear, In the minute, the nanosecond you get passive, you're going to be taking your eye off of the bird and looking for the lead. You can see that lead, but you can't look for it. For the off-dominant person, when they go back to the golf ball, okay, off of the moment of greatest visual attention, now they're increasing the consciousness, and now that 40-yarder left to right needs 8 feet, and the 40-yarder right to left needs 3 feet.
So it's the same operative problem, but...
Same solution.
Different problems.
But what the instructors, some instructors do, what a lot of instructors don't realize is, with the occlusion, you can solve the situation the right way or the wrong way. And the wrong way is the easy road.
Yep.
And that the wrong way is
and that cripples the shooter for the rest of their career.
Yes. So the easy way is, Donnie, don't you worry. Okay, we're going to put this patch on. Now, what I want you to do is I want to take the barrel to the bird. Okay. Okay. And then, okay, it's a 30-yard crosser. I want you to go to 3 feet. And when it's 3 feet, pull the trigger. Now,
Shooter's crippled to about a 75 on a soft course for the rest of her life.
But don't misread me here. The eye doctor has nothing wrong. I don't care how conscious you are when you get placement on that bird. And I don't care how conscious you are when you, okay, have connection where you're moving the same speed as the bird. As long as when you have connection, you're less barrel and more bird. And then as you ratchet down the attention and the gun goes off, it's all bird.
Right.
That's one of them, Justin, that's above my pay grade. In other words, you know, I'm going to be mentioning some names tonight because I hope I don't get into trouble. But, you know, they've given me such good information. And I just want to express how much it's helped me. In this light, okay, let's talk about for a second when Wendell Cherry was up. Okay, I went through all my whiteboard stuff with Wendell, and I get halfway through it, and I'm saying Wendell this, Wendell that, okay, the ratcheting, da-da-da-da, and he says, Doc, I understand what you're saying. But you gotta realize something. I treat ones and twos the same. What did Wendell mean? To Wendell, everyone that was strong, solid dominant on either side, he treated one way. Anyone that was off dominant, he treated the same way. So he created an environment, again, above my pay grade. He created an environment where they were always a little on the reckless and never on the careful. And if you create that environment, then what happens, okay, is the consciousness kept out of it? Ray knows what to do. One of the best shooters that I think I've ever had, and I've been fortunate enough now to have a number of really good shooters, was a guy from New Jersey 15 years ago. He won flyers in Milan.
Wow.
He was solid, right eye dominant, shooting left-handed, both eyes open. But that gun went off way before any conscious involvement could get. Your friend that went to the Helice the other day?
Yeah.
He was thrown into an environment where his dominance was moot. Made absolutely no difference at all.
Because he was shooting before he had any conscious involvement with the gun, Justin.
Yeah.
You're forced to. If somebody's shooting bunker, I could care less what their dominance is. It ain't going to get involved. Doesn't have time to get involved.
Right.
You know, when...
So does that make sense, Justin?
Yeah. Yeah. He's not thinking about what he's doing. He's just doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. And the more we can feed Jeremy that for his sporting, the better we get.
Yeah.
Now, okay, you want to be in visual control. In other words, you don't want to be operating on instinct when you can be in visual control. But the point is, you've got to realize, okay, what visual control really means. Visual control does not mean move, mount, shoot. Okay, visual control means that you can carry a target all the way across the field and still be reckless.
Absolutely.
Now, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I had evolved to the stage where I was convinced that with all off-dominant situations, you had to really kind of make sure that you're minimizing any, okay, contact. In other words, when that gun touched your cheek, it had to go off. So, again, I'm being a bit redundant here, but a guy that shoots in the 90s all the time, Christian Suter, showed me that being R3-L3.
So his dominant position is dead in the middle.
When I occlude the left eye, his hand moves left. When I occlude the right eye, his hand moves right. So he's the furthest point for sporting that we would consider shooting both eyes open. He could take a 50-yard crosser and ride it like a pony and still be reckless when the gun went off. And the reason was he ratcheted his attention onto the target at a level where he stayed active, Justin, never went passive.
Right.
So he went, instead of a softball to baseball to golf ball to pee, he went from a beach ball to a basketball to a volleyball to a softball to a golf, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So as long as you're staying active, then you're giving the conscious a difficult enough task because it can only do one thing at a time to get it out of the way. And the key is that when you take that elite shooter, okay, and you get them drinking the Kool-Aid and making seeing the target more important than breaking it, and feeling what it's like to ratchet that attention and keeping the conscious out of the way, dramatic things happen.
Right.
I saw it just so vividly, Will, with Laurie. It was just absolutely dramatic. And this is a woman that won the World Elite Women's
Nationals.
Yep.
Castellani shooting vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vests on the market. Castellani vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier of Castellani vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order.
Let me ask you another question about Halice, since we're on Halice. While I was watching these people shoot Halice, I would notice that I would see the door flop down on the front before I saw the target come out.
Did Will put you up to this?
No,
you got to tell me the truth. Justin, you got to promise me you're telling me the truth.
Yeah, I hadn't talked
to Will. Did Will ask you to say this?
No, I haven't talked to Will about it.
Okay, you guys. I still think there's a conspiracy, but maybe not. Okay, so they took me out to the Jalisco field. And you know, I'm a 50-year grouse woodcock hunter. Okay. Right. So I couldn't wait to jump into that Jalisco ring. Okay. I fear, you know, I'm gonna do well here. I missed the first 10 shots. Okay. You know, you get 5 each time. Right. And I missed the first 5, missed the second 5. And so one of the really good shooters there came up and said, "Would you like some help?" And I said, "Yes, I would like some help." Okay. He said, "You're looking at the door. You're looking at the door flop open, then you're going to the target." I got the next 4 out of 5.
Okay.
And that's a little different than what Justin experienced, what I experienced, Doc. I see the door dropping, and I start that direction looking for the bird.
Oh, that okay. Again, now you're above my pay grade.
And what Justin probably experienced, right, Justin?
I was looking at the door. I was looking at the door, Justin. When he got me away from that, okay, everything just...
I think Doc watched the door come down and then the dust settle from the door and then the door quit vibrating and then he looked for the bird.
Yeah, it's just like I would see the door flop down before I saw anything. And it looked to me like that's the way I wanted to move.
Justin, you and I would have gone and had a martini.
So while I was there and observing this, when it was done, I asked, there's a few older guys there. What do you see first? You see the door or the bird? And most of them said they see the bird first. And I asked two young ladies that were there, what do you see first? And they said, we see the door. So, yeah.
Well, when I saw the bird first, I shot 4 and 5.
Hmm. Now, were you shooting the bird further than someone else would have been if they'd have reacted as say like me and Will would have reacted?
No, the only bird I missed was a short hump. Okay, where I reacted rather than going eyes first, okay, and seeing it and letting my eyes bring my hands. I kind of brought my hands to the bird.
All right, I got another question for you. And this is getting off of Jalisco, okay? I've heard people say that you can slow a bird down with your eyes.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. Can you explain that for me?
Yeah, that's probably a better question for Will. Okay. But it's a circumstance. Absolutely. So what happens is when you're driving in a car, okay. Who did this? I think this is an Anthony thing. Okay. When you're driving in a car and you're going to throw a football in an open window on the car in the other lane, and the car in the other lane is going, okay, 60 miles an hour, and you're going 90 miles an hour. Try to get that football in that window. But if you are going 60 miles an hour, and that car is going 60 miles an hour, how much easier is it to throw that football in the window?
Right.
You slowed everything down.
Yeah.
So if you're moving the gun the same speed as the bird,
it looks slower.
Everything slows down.
And it gives you the opportunity to bring it in the kind of focus that we're striving for. When you're moving the gun the same speed as the bird and you're focused on the bird, it will look slower and fatter. And more in focus. And I try to pick on 100 slow fat bastards every tournament.
All right. Well, explain that, Will. So if.
Well, it's easy, Justin. You're a car guy. So you've got a demo car out and you're doing 130 miles an hour on the interstate. Mm-hmm. And everything looks fast, right? But when the state trooper pulls up beside you doing 130, it's really clear that he's pointing for you to pull over.
Right.
Okay, so when the gun and the target are moving the same speed, it's easier for you to bring the target into focus and for it all to look slow.
How do you slow the bird down, though? All right, so say...
But you get very focused on it, and an enabler for getting focus is getting the gun up there in harmony with the bird.
So if it's a fast bird like we're talking about...
You know, when you think about a really fast bird,
okay,
Justin, if you were to take your left hand and just put it out there in front of you because you're a right-hand shooter, mm-hmm, and move your hand with the bird, you'd realize your hand's not really moving that fast.
Right. That's right.
So if you get the gun up there moving with the bird, it's not going to seem near as fast. But when the gun is either still and the bird is blasting past it, or the gun is moving 2 or 3x the speed of the bird and blowing by it, everything looks faster. Now, the Moon Mountain Shoot guy is going to talk about the gun moving in harmony with the bird before he finishes the mount. The connection pull away guy like me is going to talk about the gun moving in harmony with the bird after you finish the mount. Doesn't matter. Same thing. You're moving the tool in harmony with the bird.
Oh, you guys are going to get me. Okay, you guys are going to get me going. Okay, here we go. Okay, guys. There's two types of eye movement related to shooting. There's two types of
eye movement. Here we go. This is the good stuff.
Okay. There's two types of eye movement. One is called smooth pursuit. The other is called saccadic. Smooth pursuit is how we break a bird. Saccadic is how we move from one bird to the other.
All right.
Saccadic eye movement is 1,000 times faster than pursuit. So when we yell, pull, move on the flash, we see the bird just as a bird, and we start ratcheting down our attention on the bird. That's called smooth pursuit. That is macula function. Macula is the spot on the back of the eye that all the rays of light focus that deal with detail. They're cone receptors. Remember, the saccadic movement is 1,000 times faster. So what happens is on a report pair, okay, as soon as they break the trigger on the first bird, they take their hands and eyes over to the second bird. What they've done there is they've continued, okay, with a smooth pursuit movement, which is 1,000 times slower than saccadic. So what has to happen, and if you watch the videos, you'll see all the big boys doing this. Okay, when you break the trigger on the first bird, you snap the eyes over to the second eye pickup point for the second bird. What that does is then allows the eyes to take the hands, and you're actually, in almost all cases, beating the trapper. You know, if you do it right, I don't care how fast the troop pair, there's always kind of a hesitation before you make the move on the second bird. And this is one of the biggest problems that I see with the AAA shooter and what's holding them back. When you break that trigger on that first bird, you've got to snap the eyes over with that saccadic movement and let the hands follow.
Mm-hmm. Operationally, from the shooting instructor side, I need you to finish the first shot and then move the eyes back to see the second target emerge from the machine. The gun will take care of itself. But too many articles and YouTube videos have talked about, after you break the first shot, you move the gun to your secondary hole point, which is a whole concept that I hate. which is where did your eyes go? They went to the secondary hole point, and then they looked for the bird. Now they're too late. They're late to the party.
Okay, I'm going to bring it a step further. Again, remember, this is the eye doctor shoes.
Yep.
Anyone that is occluded or off dominant for sure, and I think anyone, anyways, should always be looking beyond the target line, along the target line, when they call for the bird.
Yep.
Then they move on the flash and come back to the bird.
Okay, so you're saying not look at the trap where the bird comes out, look at the line?
Okay, Will and I have talked about this at length. My feeling is you should be, if the trap is beyond the break point, then I have no problem looking at the trap line. But if the trap is inside the break point, then I want to be looking through in front of the trap at a point beyond the break point.
Yeah.
I want my whole shooting world, Justin, to be from beyond the target to the target, never inside of the target.
But I hear you, Doc. I think most shooters get more wound up about laterally, whether they're looking back close to the trap or they're moving their eyes out further along the target line.
What happens in a practical sense is they don't do it. If you tell them to look at the trap, they do it. They got something specific to do.
Right.
Okay, I think it's more of that than anything else. But I, especially for that R3, L3, that, why? Because I just want them further away from the gun.
Sure.
I want them to see that relationship, but I don't want them looking at it.
Yep.
That segues, Justin, into the whole thing with what's happening today in the shooting glass industry. Mm-hmm. When I wrote my first article back about 10, 12 years ago, I wrote it, okay, the title of the article was Let There Be Light. It was an article that I did with
Todd Bender.
Todd Bender, thank you. With Todd. I was just on the phone with him yesterday. With Todd Bender. And our first discussion, we talked about the way I was going to kind of plan it out. And I mentioned to Todd, I said, now what we're really talking about is the Purkinje effect. And Todd said, whoa, Doc, wait a minute. No, we can't use words like that. And so I said, okay. In fact, the article is on my website, richardcola.com. It's a little dated, but okay. I talked about the Purkinje effect without actually mentioning it. But that really is kind of come to the forefront now in terms of how we're moving forward in relation to our shooting glass industry. So what the Purkinje effect is, if you take a geranium and you put it in the middle of the lawn in the middle of the day with no clouds, that geranium is bright, bright red. But the leaves are a very dull green. If you cut your lawn in the middle of the day with bright sun, no clouds, your lawn looks awful. But if you cut your grass right before dark, you get home late from work, it looks very lush.
Mm-hmm.
The Purkinje effect has to do with rods and cones, the two photoreceptors in the back of the eye. Cones are daytime vision, color vision, detail. Rods are nighttime vision, black and white, no detail. All of the cones are concentrated in the macula of the back of the eye. And the reason that they give the sharpest detail is only two or three cones stimulate one nerve axis, one nerve that goes to the visual cortex. Rods are non-detail, black and white, because they're 20 degrees off of the macula. And that 20 degrees off of the macula, they're, what they do is 20 to 200 rods stimulate one nerve axon. So what happens here is cones are what we call converging deficient, only two or three to stimulate one nerve axon. Rods are converging efficient, 20 to 200. So if you have a limited amount of light, Justin, then if you've got 200 receptors stimulating that one axon, then it's going to fire. But if you only have two or three of the other stimulating the axon, there's not enough there to make it fire. So because cones are macula daytime color, it's very simple. We want to let in as much light as possible so that we stimulate more cones. There's three types of vision. One is called photopic, one is called scotopic, and the other is mesopic. Photopic vision is color, daylight, cones. Scotopic vision is nighttime, black and white rods. Mesopic is the transition between the two. Now, here's the rub. Pursuit movement is enhanced by cone function. And pursuit movement is how we break a bird. So pursuit movement relies more on detail. So I wish I coined this phrase, but I didn't. Christian Suter did it about a month ago. When I got through talking this whole thing that I'm talking right now to Christian, okay, he said, I get it. Contrast sells glasses. A wow factor, the tint of the month.
It makes the target pop. You hear that all the time, right?
Just okay, contrast sells glasses. Detail breaks targets.
Thank you for joining us this week on Shotgun Sports. We will conclude this conversation next week.